D3. Get 5. Damara Rastakam. Idam temu kambojam avyakta nilayar vritam kuntalai snigda raktais chakopya uhushumbi tambimba rakta daram me manasya virastam malam lakshadaptai. All right, then. Jai Govinda Prabhu, would you like to read the translation and commentary?
Yes, Maharaj, yes, okay. O Lord, the cheeks of your blackish lotus face, which is encircled by locks of curling hair, have become radiant like bimba fruits do to Mother Yashoda's kisses. What more can I describe than this? Millions of opulences are of no use to me, but may this vision constantly remain in my mind. Commentary by Srila Sanatana Goswami. And furthermore, the longing to see your Sri Mukha, your divine lotus face, that is a Parama Manohara, supremely enchanting, is stated in this verse beginning with Idamte. Sometime while one is meditating deeply within and perceives just such indescribable beauty and splendor, that is what is revealed in this verse. His face is purple, kamala color. Oh, it resembles a fully blossomed lotus flower. Nikhila Santapahari, his face is the remover of all kinds of distress. And Paramananda Rasamaya, and it is pervaded with the supreme mellows of pure bliss. That lotus face, Manasi Muhur Avirastam, might it be revealed again and again within my mind. What does that lotus face look like? It is surrounded, Vritam, by circling, curling hair, Kuntala, that is very dark blue, Avyakta Nila, glossy Snigdha, and tinged with red Rakta. The word Vritam suggests that just as a lotus flower is surrounded with hovering honeybees, similarly the Lord's lotus face is encircled with curly locks that bounce around whenever he moves. That word Gopiya by the Gopi indicates that his face is kissed again and again by either Sri Yashoda or by Sri Radha. The word Muhu again and again is relative to this word Gopiya, and it reads properly exactly where it is in the verse. This being the case, may the divine lotus face Muhus Chumbitam kissed repeatedly by the supremely fortunate Gopi Mama Manasi in my mind, Avirastam, may it manifest even once. This is the meaning. Or else the word Sada, always found in the previous verse, carries over to its definitive conclusion in the present verse, thereby indicating may it always manifest. This intention can also be accepted. Finally, that lotus face is especially described thus, Bimbavat Ratadharam. He whose lips are cherry red like the bimba fruit, if that form is manifest within my mind, I will be fully satisfied. Therefore, it is said about Lakshalabhai, the attainment of millions and millions of other types of benediction, alam, they are of no use to me whatsoever. This is the meaning. This is most definitely the message that is conveyed by the fifth verse. Thus, and Sanatana Goswami's Dik Darshini Tika on the fifth shloka of Shishi Tavadarashtaka.
Oh, thank you very much, Prabhu.
Thank you, Maharaj.
And text 6. Namo Deva Damodarar Tararanta Vishno Prasira Prabhu Dukha Chalabdi Magnam Kripa Drishti Vishyati Dinam Bhatanu Grihaneshat Mamakya Medyakshi Trisha. Jonathan, would you like to read the translation and commentary?
Thank you, Maharaj. O unlimited Vishnu, O Master, O Lord, be pleased upon me. I am drowning in an ocean of sorrow and am almost like a dead man. Please shower the rain of mercy on me, uplift me, and protect me with your nectarian vision. Commentary. Now, by the potency of prayer, feelings of spontaneous love arise, and one especially craves to have the direct vision of the Lord. In this regard, when referring to topics about Sakshat Darshana, or direct vision of the Lord, only Sri Nama Sankirtan is the Parama Sadhana, or supreme method for this attainment. After fixing his beauty in the mind, one then offers sorrowful prayers by way of Sri Nama Kirtan, as in this verse beginning with Namo. In the text of a Mula Shloka, such as this sixth verse, usually the word Tubhyam, unto you, would be found in order to complete the sense of the prayer. But in this case, the excitement of prema causes the reciter to neglect all feelings of awe or reverence. Therefore, in the mood of being in the personal presence of the Lord, the word Tubhyam is neglected. Hey Prabhu means Hey Madhya Ishvara, O my controller. Offering you my obeisances, I beg Prashida. This word indicates prasadam, or be pleased with me and show your mercy. The reason for praying is, I am dukkha jalabdi magnam, immersed in the ocean of misery. Specifically, the word dukkha, pain, misery, distress, indicates either the agony of repeated birth and death in the samsarika material world, or else the torment of not seeing you, resulting in feelings of ocean-like infinite desolation. Jalam, meaning net, illusion, deception, and abdi, ocean, denotes the extreme vastness. By the force of my own karma, I am thus magnum, submerged. I am tortured by all these harsh afflictions, therefore I am atidinam, very distressed. Or else another meaning of the word atidinam is, I am completely bereft of the association of saintly persons, and consequently without their assistance I am extremely fallen. Or else, yet another meaning is, due to not seeing you, I am just like a living dead man. In this regard, I am also agyam. I am particularly ignorant about how to solve this problem. Then, kripaya, drishti, drishti vrishtya, showing your own mercy, please shower me with your nectar-laden glances, anugrihana, thereby uplifting me and once more enthusing me with life. This alone is the purport of the prayer. Then akshi drishyo edi, please become visible before my eyes. Prayers are usually made according to the sequence in which this one is prayed. As such, it is not appropriate in this case to first mention the boon that is being requested, due to its nature being the topmost of rarely attained benedictions. The glory of attaining the direct vision of the Lord, Sakshat Darshan, within the mind, is explained very logically by the personal associates of the Lord, Sri Bhagavat Parshada, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Uttarakhanda 3.179-182. From this passage, one may gain specific knowledge of these topics. Now, the devotional kirtan of the Lord's names used to address him at the beginning of the Mula Shloka will be explained. In this sixth verse, the word Deva indicates he is Divya Rupa, O Lord of Divine Beauty. This beauty is the cause for desiring his darshan. The address of Damodar intimates specifically that he is glorified for his excellence of bhakta vatsalya, or affection for his devotees, up to the point of allowing them to bind him around the waist. Therefore, I will be qualified only by bhakti to see him with my own eyes. He who has no end, whose mercy has no limits, is addressed as Ananta. Therefore, he will certainly shower his glance of mercy and thus favor me. The address Prabhu connotes he Achincha Ananta Abhuta Mahasakti Shukta, O you who are endowed with inconceivable, limitless, astonishingly grand potency. Therefore, you who cannot be perceived by the senses can only become visible to my eyes by dint of this same inconceivable Shakti of yours. Addressing him as Isha suggests, Hey Parama Svantatra, O you who are supremely independent. In showing your favor even to unfit souls, you are dependent on no one else. And moreover, the address Vishnu means he Sarvya Vyapaka, O you who are all pervading. Furthermore, it means, O you who are fond of entering into Vrindavan's secluded caves and bower cottages. Praying like this indicates that it is not difficult for him to come before one's eyes. He does not have to labor hard to come from a distance. Some additional interpretations of the above-mentioned forms of address are now given. Or else, he Ananta, or he Ananta, means that he is aparichina, or continuously existent without interval or separation. The address of Vishnu means he is sarva vyapin, or living everywhere. Therefore, he Damodar proclaims him thus, under the sway of his own parama vatsalya vishesha, or supremely affectionate attribute, there is absolutely nothing that he cannot do. The purport of the other words used for addressing him may also be understood in terms of these expanded indications. Thus ends Sanatana Goswami's Digdarshini Tika on the sixth shloka of Sri Sri Damodarashikam.
O Lord Damodar, in your form as a baby, Mother Yashoda bound you to a grinding stone with a rope for tying cows. You then freed the sons of Kubera, Manigriva, and Alakubera, who were cursed to stand as trees, and you gave them the chance to become your devotees. Please bless me in the same way. I have no desire for liberation into your effulgence. Commentary by Sri Sanatana Goswami. In this way, the attributes of pure ecstatic love, prema vishesha, one becomes infused with supreme longing and praise for the direct audience with the Lord Sakshat Darshan. From the attributes of that prayerful longing arises ecstatic loving service, prema bhakti, which demonstrates the supreme reality of Sakshat Darshan. This prema bhakti is verily the only means for attaining his darshana. First establishing this the fact, prayer is then offered to him, or else if one does receive his vision, but once the mind is unsatisfied due to not seeing him, the very next second the agony of separation sets in. Holding an apprehension like this, which perpetually brings the Lord under one's sway, is a feature of prema bhakti, which is the one and only means of maintaining such a condition. This being declared the case, then how could it possibly be accomplished by such an utmost offender like me? The answer to this concern is that Sri Bhagavan's quality of Bhaktavats Sanya affection for his devotees makes the impossible quite possible. And under resolve, this was certain, the proposal of moksha is again rejected here in the 7th verse beginning with Kubera Atmajau, where the prayer is made purely for attaining Prema Bhakti. The words Baddham Purti indicates that his Sri Vikraha, the divine bodily form, was bound with ropes tied to the grinding mortar by Sri Jashoda. And by that Sri Vikraha, he liberated the two sons of Kubera. Thus, by his dragging the mortar between the two trees known as Jamala Arjuna, Bhagavan personally demonstrates the supreme fortune that comes in the form of Shakshat Darshana seeing his form, personally touching his form, and so forth, which are integral attributes of his supremely beautiful pastimes. Even though he himself was tied up, now it is described how he liberated Nala Kubera and Manigriva. The word Mochita denotes that they were liberated not just from the curse of Sri Narada, but from samsara, the material world, as well. They were not awarded with kevalam or impersonal liberation of merging into his all-pervading effulgence, but it is definitely stated that they were gifted with prema bhakti. Those two boys are described as bhakti bhajau. They took the shelter of bhakti as supreme goal. Those who cannot give up the shelter of devotion in any way, shape or form are called bhakti bhajam. Krishna personally transformed them in this way. Thus, it is the intention of the author to specifically declare that not only were they liberated, but that they were also awarded with prema bhakti. In this regard, the Lord has declared to these two boys in Bhagavat 10.10.42, the sprout of prema for me, which was your most supremely cherished goal, has now fully arisen in both of you. From this ecstatic mood, you will never take birth in the material world again. Sri Krishnadana Goswami has elucidated upon this verse in his own commentary on the Bhagavatam. The purport is, the word vam, you too, indicates that Lord Krishna was addressing the two boys thusly. The most desired thing you have prayed for is Parabhava, and you both have fully developed this prema for me. Therefore, you will never again experience Bhava. They repeated, therefore you will never again experience the bhava, the repeated birth and death in the material world. Nor will you feel the misery of samsara even while living here. Then he, Damodar Tatha, just like that, Swaka, the exclusive shelter asraya of your own lotus feet, or else the exclusive objective vishaya of such a beautiful form as yours, namely Prema Bhakti, me, unto me, prayachya, please bestow it upon unto me in the most lavish way. Yachya means please give, and the prefix pra indicates prakarshena, or profusion, or intensity. Verily, it is just like Lord Sri Krishna is saying, oh hey, why are you so enthusiastic for prema bhakti? Just accept liberation like the two sons of Kubera, whereby the miseries of birth and death in the material world are finished. To that, the answer remains the same. Neti, no, thanks you. No, thank you. Other than Iha, this goal named Pranabhakti, Namokshe, Grahome, Asti Damodara, I have no eagerness for any other type of liberation, O Damodara. The purpose of this is, one may think, if the samsara is destroyed by engaging in Pranabhakti, let it be. Or if Pranabhakti doesn't destroy the samsara, then let me not develop it. I truly have no inclination for either mentality. The convergential mood is thus, if a chintamani lies in the palm of your hand, then all activities will take will be perfect. Therefore, what is the value of grasping a tiny insignificant thing like moksha? Or else, the phrase, He Damodar, Prema Bhakti Sukama Prayachya means, this Bhagavan's belly is bound with ropes. So from him, one prays for Prema Bhakti in order to perpetually bind his belly. The eagerness for this reciprocation makes it actually possible. Apprehending such, the prayer continues, Namokshe Graha, etc., where the alarm devotee offers, do I not have eagerness for you to become liberated from the ropes? The purport is, yes, I certainly care. This is precisely the meaning, but all I want from you in your bound of form is that you bestow my most cherished benediction of your bhakti. Or else, Yet another meaning is, the word here indicates, please bestow program bhakti here in Vrindavan. This means, this intention also follows. To interpret further, one prays thus, because Vrindavan is the exclusive agent for the arising of program bhakti's unique happiness. Also, only in Vrindavan, Sri Krishna especially the truths of his Sakshat Darshan are found there in that form, which is very bound. And further, one prays for the peaceful residence in Vrindavan, because only there does Bhagavan desire to especially manifest the joy of the forest, Vrindavana Vihari. All this is additionally evidence. Further details of these topics could be ascertained as we have been doing herein. The saints, Sanatana Goswami's Digdarshan Tika on the 7th slope of Sri Dhamadhara Ashtakam.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Alright. Any questions? Prema Bhakti. One doesn't pray for Prema Bhakti with the purpose of getting liberation. Not the result of Prema Bhakti is one will get liberation automatically. But that is not the purpose of Prema Bhakti, praying for Prema Bhakti or desiring Prema Bhakti. And if that is the case, then it is not Prema Bhakti. It is Karma Bhakti. Or Jnanishra Bhakti. Karma Nishra Bhakti, Jnanishra Bhakti. Text 8. Then, Namaste Sudamne Swaraditi Damne. Tadiyoga Rayakta Vishwasa Damne. Namo Radhikayai Tvadiya Priyaya. Namo Nanda Vilaya Devaya Tuyam. Text 8.
What
do we have?
Krishna Prabhu, would you like to read? Yes, Maharaj. Translation. O Lord, the entire universe was created by Lord Brahma, who was born from your abdomen, which was bound by a rope by Mother Yashoda. To this rope I offer my humble obeisances. I offer my obeisances to your most beloved Srimati Radharani and to your unlimited pastimes. Commentary by Srila Sanatana Goswami. Now at the conclusion of the prayer, in order to summarize the presentation of topics that are being prayed for, and also to arouse the attributes of bhakti, obeisances are given separately unto Bhagavan's civic binding, bodily limbs, associates, and so on in the verse beginning with Namaste Su. It is stated, Te Dhamne Namas Namostu, I bow to the Mahaparsha, the magnificent rope that binds the belly. What is this grand rope like? In Suprantaya Dipte Dhamna, it is Suprantaya Dipte Dhamna, the source for the shelter of splendorous effulgence. In this regard, it is suggested by the author that such a Mahaparsha is the very abode of the endlessly radiant, concentrated Brahma Deja, or all-pervading Brahman effulgence. After that, Vadeva Uddaraya Namostu, I bow to your belly. The reason for this is because while bound with ropes, you especially manifest the beauty and other qualities of your belly as well as the glorious characteristics of Vatsalya Leela and their pastimes. What is this belly like? It is stated, Vishwasya Dhamma, that belly is the support for all the universes in creation, including all the stationary and moving beings contained therein. From the lotus navel, on his abdomen has sprouted a gigantic lotus flower that sustains the 14 worlds. Additionally, during his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, he bodily displayed the Vishwarupa or universal form to his mother on two occasions. This is another indication. Therefore, in such a pastime of binding him by the waist, Mother Yashoda bound up the whole universe. Indeed, she brought the entire creation under her control. This is the proclamation. It is never possible to factually bind all-pervading, limitlessly potent Lord, who is Isha, the Supreme Controller, but he willingly accepts binding as an attribute of his super-excellent affection for his devotees, Bhakta Vatsalya Vishesha, and by that acceptance of binding, we are informed that such pastimes are imperceptible to all the logic and reasoning available within all the material universes. This is an intimation of his Aishwarya Vishesha and attributes of majesty. The reason for offering obeisance is first unto the robe, Dava, and then unto the Lord's belly, Uddara, is because the robe is situated upon his belly. Or furthermore, to indicate ascending superiority in significance of different things. Respects are first offered to the robe and then to his belly. Now, Namo Radhikaye, obeisances are offered unto his beloved Bhagavati, Sri Radhika. This is done in order to show that the mercy of his beloved enables one to fully attain the desired objective, including objectives that are even beyond the range of desire. By offering obeisances unto Sri Radhika, it is implied that obeisances are also being offered unto all the gopis, or else, since Radhika is the foremost of them all, obeisances are offered only unto her. The word Radhika is used here to note the attributes and excellence of one who is always engaged in Sri Bhagavan's aradhana or worship, arranging only for his pleasure. This is the purpose of using her specific name Radhika in this text. Therefore, Vedeya Priyaye, obeisances unto your beloved. Or else, this name Radhika indicates Ludhi. In grammatical terms, it is capable of conveying a meaning not supported by derivation. Therefore, regardless of her aradhana or worship of you, she is still your eternally dear, most loved, beloved, Nitya Priya. In this connection also, the word Vadeya indicates that not only is she dear to yourself, but to all your other devotees as well. What more then could be said about her, about how dear she is to you? Additionally, this statement implies that you are also her Nitya Priya, eternally dear, beloved. By such the excellence of Sri Radhika's love for Sri Krishna, Prema Vishesha has suggested, this verse Priyaya Namaha in this verse can either mean my obeisances unto you, Radhika's beloved, or my obeisances unto Radhika, you are beloved. Whoever is beloved to you, such a person is certainly worshipable for the entire universe. Therefore, since Radhika is your own dear most beloved, Namosto, I bow before her. And finally, at the conclusion of the prayer, the author desires to describe the supreme super excellence of the Rasalila and other transcendental pastimes of Lord Shri Krishna, and other pastimes that Lord Shri Krishna performs with Sri Radhika. But since they are the topmost of confidential topics, they are not mentioned directly. The logic of Madhurena Samapayet, all undertakings should be completely sweetly applied, should be completed sweetly, apaisya. Therefore, such confidential pastimes are referred to only by a mere dint, as they are offered to obeisances with words Namo Nanta Lilaya, obeisances unto your limitless pastimes. The word Devaya indicates that obeisances are offered unto Bhagavan, who is Lokatara, supernatural, divine, transcendental. With this, it is intimated that by Damodara's Krishna's divinely supernatural quality, then all the leelas performed by him are similarly transcendental. Or else, it could also be interpreted to mean my obeisances unto you, who are continuously engaged in the pastimes along with Sri Radhika. Therefore, Ananta Leelaya Tubhyam Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are thus performing limitless pastimes. By the words Ananta Leela, it is suggested to include all the pastimes associated with the realm of Gokula Vrindavana. I offer my obeisances unto all those leelas. Such a mood is most certainly expressed in this verse. Thus ends Sanatan Goswami's Dirdarshini Tika on the 8th shloka of Sri Sri Damodara Sutra.
Alright, thank you, Prabhu. So, why is he not here? What was that? That's what it meant. Why is he mentioned here of worshiping the rope? What is this? And it's mentioned that the rope is worshipped as the Parmani faultus. Why is that connection made? Is that, no? Sparaditi Dhani.
It is because it is tied to Lord Shri Krishna's belly.
Yes.
It is tied to attach to him.
Yes.
Being related to him is also.
Yes. It's connected with him. Why is that? Why is that then identified as Brahman effulgence? Why has such a Rati Muni identified that in this way?
Maharaj, probably the intention is to suggest that the bhakti or the what is achieved by bhakti is far more, you know, than what is achieved by just merely, you know, samadhi into brahmacharya or something like that. That means so many, tapasvis, they are working so hard, or they are trying so hard to burn into the Brahman effulgence, to attain liberation. But for a devotee who has tied the Supreme Lord by the rope of love, the Sena Bhakti, then the object of such love is the source of that, even that liberation. So, therefore, devotee is much superior.
Superior to our friends, superior to Brahman?
Yes, ma'am.
But why has that girl been called Brahman? Brahman effulgence. Can you understand the question? What specifically is it about that rope?
Maharaji, can I answer?
Yes?
Is it like, as we see that from the Lord Vishnu's navel, Lord Brahma comes in, so something analogical to the rope, is it?
That's the belly,
yeah.
The connection with worshipping of the belly. The rope and the belly are our worship. When the belly is the source of the whole creation, it's like when Mother Yasoda had opened the mouth of Krishna, he also the whole creation within his belly. Vishwasya Dhamme, the whole. It is the abode of the whole Vishwasya, the whole manifested universe is in that belly. But then why the rope is the Brahmajyoti?
It is Krishna's paraphernalia, and it is said that Krishna is not different from his paraphernalia.
Yes.
And therefore, maybe it is also non-different from Brahma. You can argue like that.
Hare Krishna. Well, Brahmani effulgence is actually what is encircling the spiritual world. From our perspective, this material world, the Brahman, Brahman is a effulgence that's surrounding Vaikuntha and Kaloka, encircling. When we try to get out from this material world, we have to cross over the Vairocha. are what is the encircling this material world. And the Brahman effulgence is there. It's not really, it is not exactly Krishna. It is his energy, no doubt. Paraphernalia, you could say, or his energy. But it's the impersonal energy. And that is surrounding that, from our point of view, surrounding the transcendental abode, transcendental realm of the Lord, and his personal features and devotees, etc. So I think it's something to do with that, huh? Would you say? It's a correct interpretation. Grammar of... And that rope's form, that circular form, is being supported. It's getting its form from the belly of the Lord. From the form of the Lord, it produces the form of Brahmajyoti, which can't have any, or be not have any particular form without that support of the Lord there. Mm-hmm. It gets its form from the form of the Lord. Otherwise, it would be completely devoid of anything, any characteristic, any avishesh. And it gets its whole significance from that, where it is placed, its placement with respect to the Lord. It has a dependence upon him like that. Generally, we also think of the rope as the love, prema bhakti itself, by which the Lord is bound. Lord is the complete whole, the highest truth. Nothing can capture. By what can we capture that supreme ultimate truth? The supreme whole, complete whole. What can captivate, what can encircle that? Finally, from a logical point of view, it would be impossible to conceive of anything like that. It would be actually an error of logic to say that the supreme absolute truth could be encircled or encompassed by anything. And yet, by his own supreme opulence, one of his supreme opulences, Bhakti Vatsalya Vishesh, by the supreme opulence of his affection for his devotee, he allows himself to be captured. Totally illogical, right? If we were to analyze how this could be possible, we would have to conclude it's impossible. So the rope also has that significance of the Bhaktivatsalya Vishesh, shining, the highest shining effulgence of the Lord. Effulgence is actually what is coming to us, what is manifesting. It's manifesting itself to us, and that manifesting to us is that Bhaktivatsalya Vishesh, that Supreme Lord's affectionate dealings with his devotees coming from him to us. And in that sense, it's an effulgence, a shining out, shining forth into us. So that Brahman effulgence does not have to be understood in a personal way, but as the personal opulences of the Lord, shining opulence of the Lord, that is manifesting itself to the devotees, to what Sai Vishesh. But it's coming from Krishna to us. And the most brilliant feature of the Lord that attracts us even more. To interpret in different ways with that also. Alright. Any other questions or comments?
I think specifically when we say it is Vruddhi Dhamne, Dham means abode or the shelter. So it also indicates that the refuge is not the final destiny, but the final destiny is the very source of the shelter itself is Sri Krishna himself.
Then maybe you can introduce us, Krishna, who is Prajwal, and the person.
His father was given to me by Sushi Prabhu.
Oh, okay.
And he's from Navadvip, I guess. I'm not sure if he's from
Navadvip.
He's from Calcutta. And Siddharth Sarogi is. He said he's in my university. He's doing financial engineering. His company has a master's in financial engineering. And he met me while I was way on my way to your home, on the ground bus. And he's interested in the spirituality. And he's working on something like Art of Living and all with some devotees. So I invited him today to a conference.
Financial engineering. I never heard that those two words used together like that.
Yes, it is. See that? Can you speak?
Yes.
Yes. Maharaj, you can speak.
Yeah, even I didn't hear the two words together before I started the course. It's really interesting.
That sounds like something Bernie Madoff would do. Financial engineering. That's very good. I suppose it can be used for good.
Yeah.
All right, then. Any other questions or comments?
I have a question.
What's that?
In the Bhagavad Sandarbha, there is a description of 24 elements. And there are the five Karmendriyas, Gyanendriyas, five Mahabhutas. So how can the how can I be sent to the legs, arms, tongue, generative organ, and eyes, ears, nose, touch, taste, or all these basic elements are part of material nature. I mean the working senses, the knowledge acquiring senses, how they are part of the material nature.
How are they
the legs, the eyes, how they're... I mean, when I look around myself, then I see earth, for example, and I see water, okay, they are there, but I don't see around myself working senses or knowledge acquiring senses. How they are part of nature.
Instrumental part of nature. That generally senses can't work. They won't do anything without the consciousness there, being there. The consciousness is the utilizer of those things. They are subtle, no doubt. But subtle, they know that mind, intelligence, even the ego, false ego, is material. That doesn't mean that because you can't see them with our gross senses, that they are not material. Even subtle material energy is there. I see. So this is in the Sankhya philosophy. They have 24 elements. They describe them like that in terms of the sense of the knowledge acquiring. But we should understand those knowledge acquiring senses. They don't operate independently of the consciousness. They can't operate independently of consciousness. They are receiving something. Something is in the process for them. But what it means actually to see or to experience that is not something that comes ultimately from those things themselves. Because even in the Sankhya system, they are aware of that. Huh? And they divide. They have a dualistic system of prakriti and purusha. They know that the prakriti, of its own accord, can register any experience. The experience has to be registered by the purusha. But they don't have any conception of the supreme purusha in Sankhya. And the atheistic Sankhya, at least. They have no understanding of the Supreme Purusha. Only they know the 24 elements, prakriti and liberation, and that there is a Purusha involved, but they have no idea of any ultimate Supreme Personality or Godhead. They have no conception of God in the atheistic Sankhya. So the knowledge acquiring senses, they are instruments. An instrument doesn't do anything by itself. An instrument like a microscope or a telescope. But a microscope can't see anything. A telescope can't see anything, but it's an instrument. When the living entity is there, then it can be utilized for his purposes. It has some use. Otherwise, on its own, it has no use. Similarly, these 24 elements, they are instrumental in the activities of the living entity, but they themselves don't have any independent functioning capacity on their own. We may also consider, from the point of view of reflection, in the mirror, the reflected image of yourself in the mirror. And that image in the mirror doesn't walk, can't do anything. It can't see, it can't hear, can't touch. The reflected image can't do any of those things that your original image is doing. And yet it appears to be doing everything. If we identify, if we could identify with the mirror image of ourself, become absorbed in the mirror image and think that is myself, and that the real self is something completely illusory, as it were, if we can switch our worlds from the world of present existence into the reflected world of the mirror, we would identify with the reflected image, and everything that we were experiencing, we would think, was being experienced by the reflected image. Something like that is happening with the soul, conditioned soul. He is absorbed in the reflected image, and conceiving that to be the thing that is thinking, feeling, and so forth. And then he is experiencing all those all those things, but he's in a different plane.
And there is a question more about this topic, that five Dhammatras sound,
right.
Sound, touch, color, taste, they are said to be the cause of five Mahabhutas, either air, fire, water, ether, air, fire, water. So how properties can be cause of a gross substance? I mean, they are the quality of the substance, how they can cause.
Yes. Well, according to Veda, the cause and the effect is in the cause. Cause and effect are apparently different, but without the without the effect, there cannot be any cause. The cause would not be called a cause if the effect wasn't there. But the effect must also be within the cause. But you can separate the sense from that which is sensed. There's no real separation from that. If we analyze it very carefully, we'll find that it's impossible to find it, to determine the defining this differentiating line between the sense and the thing that is sensed. There's something like an Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva principle is at work there. The seeing activity and the thing seen are obviously different. But tell me, what is that difference? Where does that line appear between seeing and the thing seen? What is the line that divides them? So although we say seeing is different from the thing seen, without seeing there would be no object seen, and without the object to be seen there would be no question of seeing. If there was nothing to see, then we couldn't speak of seeing. And if there was nothing such as seeing, we cannot talk of the object that is seen. Something like that. They're intertwined with one another. Integrated, mightily integrated with one another. From an analytical, logical point of view, they are integrated with one another. At the same time, they are distinct from one another. Actually, it was by thinking about this problem of seeing and seeing that I finally was able to get some idea of what it means, the Chinti Shakti, Chinti Beta Beta Tattva, the truth of in simultaneously one and different. We can see it in this very activity. And we meditate very deeply on this seer, seeing, and seeing. What are the differences between these three? And what is the point where these things are separated from one another, that we call them different. We know very clearly that they are different. Say the seer and seeing are not different. The knower, the known, and the knowing, that connects them. And yet at the same time, what is that difference? It'd be very hard pressed to say what it is. This is very important. So far I'm concerned, I think there's a very important question to be able to ask yourself. And to recognize that the achinta, the indivisible identity and difference that exists there. And I'll give you some idea about what it means, the achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Is that okay? How would it prove?
Something to hear again and think about it. I have one more question. It is mentioned that Karmendriyas, Gyanendriyas, and the Dhanmantras, including the mana, are the doorkeepers in Vaikuntha. I mean, how that to understand?
Doorkeepers. So they are out, they are at the door. Keepers. That means beyond the doorkeepers, then you have to go through the door, and then when you go through the door, you get to Vaikuntha. So they are outside like those.
Yeah, they are outside like the doorkeepers. Like on the apartment, we ask Jan and we ask.
Jai are also doorkeepers. They are outside the Vaikuntha, but and they were also outside the material energy, but they were also outside the Vaikuntha. So these things, these all these principles, like I was saying, knower, knowing, and known, seer, seeing, and seen, they give us some idea about Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. That if we can meditate upon that, we will see how the Achintya Veda Veda Tattva principle is working. That will be enough to get us from the material world to the Brahman, understanding of Brahman, that something more that something more than this world of duality is at work. Yes, we are part of something that is far more subtle than this dualistic point of view that we have, that I am not the body, that there's a consciousness and that object of consciousness, subject and object, so forth. These are all dualities, but how to see that there's a harmony also there. There's a oneness, integrity, that will get us far from the world of duality. And that is considered a Chinti Veda Veda Tantra, is actually considered the level of Brahman, of Gyan. They get you as high as even Shiva, realization, Mahesham. But it's still outside. It's still outside by Kuntha, just at the doorway. So I would say it means that we can, through those things, we can understand the Chinti Veda Veda Tantra, which will bring us above the plane of duality. But to enter properly into the plane of Vaikuntha, only Sharanagati, surrender, not Gyan. Gyan will help us beyond that point. Only Bhakti will help. All right. I think we better end now. I've reminded you, I don't want to keep everyone all day. We can talk about these things. My humble dandavatanam, so all. Would you like to say Hare Krishna to one another?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.